Life can feel overwhelming, but you don't have to go through it alone. On my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, I share openly and vulnerably about everything life brings us and what we can learn by living with our hearts a little bit more open. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on self-care, motherhood, healing, and more. You are enough, just the way you are. This podcast is a reminder of that. Follow and listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
In one moment, a gift most humans never receive in a lifetime.
This is the Bob and Jeff Show, starring Bob Lutz.
Starting next week, this is my sec. Bob breaks down the NFL.
No!
Jeff Lutz.
Are you kidding me? You're terrible at it.
Warning. 97.5 and 1240 KFH.
If you're invited to partake of it.
Oh, gasp. I'm so excited.
Stand by for action.
Hello again, everybody. It is a Tuesday edition, the Bob and Jeff Show here on KFH Radio. I'm Bob Lutz. We have a three-man booth today, but it's not the three-man booth we typically have. It's the big fella Anthony and Mike Furches in with me today in the West Wichita basement studio. A little bit unique look to the show today. Big fella, how you been?
If you want the truth, I'm going to tell you, I've been tired.
Tired?
Very tired.
You're a young man compared to Mike and me.
I may be young, but these last few weeks has been a lot of miles.
Been working you, huh?
Yeah, because I got my job working security again, so I get off one job from 10 to 6.
Oh, my goodness.
And then I go into the other job from 7 to 11.
And, well, that's crazy.
And the cop-out would have been, well, Bob, I'm going to be asleep, so, but I like this opportunity because opportunities like this don't come but maybe once in a lifetime. And anytime I'm in your presence and looking at you in this League 42 shirt that I sure wish I had, my birthday passed last month, it's always a pleasure to be in your presence looking at that League 42 shirt. You probably got about 1,000 of them.
And sucking up will get you everywhere, man.
Yeah.
Here's our friend Mike Furches on your left. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing well. I'm a little tired, but I'm recovering and getting much better. I had a very busy lot of miles under my tail end over the last 3 weeks. So
took a long trip.
I went and spent a week with family in Tennessee, which I love. For a family, we do our family reunion last week in July every year, and so you go from one reunion to another, and it's a shame that you see people there 1 year that's not the next because they've gone on, you know. But then went to Ohio, and I was telling you earlier before the show, I went to spend time with my daughter. I love family, and the little town of Bluffton, Ohio. The Olympic Games, I was telling you, I'm not, and this is no exaggeration, 3 out of every 5, probably 6 out of every 10 homes had a plaque, like a political sign, that said, "Let's go, Trevor." And one of their athletes from a little town called Bluffton, Ohio, about 3,000 students, one of their athletes made it to the Olympic Games in the 400-meter hurdles.
3,000 citizens or the college?
3,000 citizens.
Okay.
With the college.
And he made it to this Olympics?
Yes. And his track coach in high school coaches my grandson.
All right.
And so that's, you know, I can tell you that, one of these elite families, my grandson's getting trained by a guy who coached an Olympic athlete. But it was
impressive.
But to see the Olympics there in that type of a setting.
I missed the Olympics.
It was, I
really enjoyed them.
There was the controversy, but I forget it. I thought it was amazing. And anytime you see those athletes, it's
controversy in every facet of life now.
Yeah.
In 2024, you can walk down the street chewing bubble gum, and somebody will make that a controversy.
Controversy.
You know the one great song, don't you? The old prophetic song, "Why Can't We Be Friends?"
Well, it's...
I got another one. How about this one? Can't we just all get along?
Yeah, something like that. But
that's the great prophet.
It
Rodney.
Seems like we've lost the ability to do that.
Yeah, and you know, for those that don't know, I mean, yours and Jeff's and mine, probably Anthony. We all have even different political views, but you know what? We get along. I mean, I love Jeff to death. He's like a brother almost.
That's the first time I heard somebody say they love Jeff.
Well, I love him.
All right, two times.
You don't love him? mean, he's just a wonderful
man. Jeff is like Jeff is like a brother to me, man. Just like
well,
a
there
brother.
You go. Oh, so he's like a brother to both of you, which must mean you're like sons to me. But I already have a son in Duda, so I don't need any more.
Duda, Duda.
Yeah, Jason Duda not here today. Jeff on his way to Manhattan, taking their daughter, Erin, to college. That's cool.
I kind of wish
I was on that trip. As parents, that's something you only do once in your life.
Yeah,
is take your kid away to college for the first time.
I didn't get to.
And that's impressive. And I told them to send me a photo on the trip.
Is he not
and I want to share that on social media.
Yeah.
Because that's cool.
It's a big deal. One of the most meaningful days of my life, emotional days, was the day I took my daughter to college. Took her to Winfield, and the man, I was, it tore me up.
Well, imagine. I mean, for 18 years, this person has been in your stead.
Yeah.
They've been by your side, in your home. Your life has revolved around that person. And this is their only child. So now you take her away to Manhattan, and you're driving home later tomorrow. Tomorrow's the check-in and orientation. But then you're driving home tomorrow without that person, and it's going to be stark.
Yeah. And you're in that line, too. It's your granddaughter.
Yeah. You know, I mean, but I'm not the parent, yeah. And certainly as a grandparent, we know she's in good hands at K-State, and she's got a plan of action. She's not going to college just saying, well, I'll figure it out on the fly. She's got a concrete plan for what she wants to do, and that's fashion design. And she's already planning to study abroad either her sophomore or junior year. That's cool. That's impressive.
Aren't you
proud of the kid?
I mean, aren't you glad that intelligence gene skipped from you to her?
Yeah, I am.
Ooh. I'm
there's a little shot at his brother.
Yeah, I'm wondering if he's listening on the Odyssey app right about now. Matter of fact, if he is listening, make sure you bring me some K-State gear back, like a jersey or something, or, you know, a ball cap. I want to make sure it comes from Manhattan. Don't go to Walmart in here in Wichita or any of these other stores. I want it directly from the campus bookstore. By the way, Mike, I got a question to ask you.
Yes, sir.
You said you was in Tennessee, right?
Yeah.
Did you see any of my hats there?
UT hats?
Any of my hats?
Any of your hats?
Right.
What are they?
Because all my exes live in Texas, so I hang my hat in Tennessee.
Oh my gosh!
Oh boys, it's going to be that kind of show.
Oh my goodness!
Now, if
where's
Duda
when you need him?
Jeff had said that, I'd kick him out. I'd ask him polite. Not polite.
Oh.
I'd say, Jeff, this show has a little higher ceiling than that.
That's the difference between me and Jeff.
That was marginally funny. I get it. Like, good job, Anthony.
You know, when Jeff's going to turn into a comedy show, don't it?
Now, here's what we have for you on the show today. We continue Big 12 football previews with Matt Mershall from the Orlando Sentinel. We'll be talking Central Florida.
Central Florida.
The Big 12 is spread all over the country now. So you throw a dart at a map of the U.S., and chances are you'll hit somewhere that has a Big 12 team.
How many teams is in that conference now?
16.
Why don't they call it the Global 16 or the All-State 16?
Something. They've got that Big 12 thing kind of marketed. So
I think they should go back. We're still under the SEC banner. The league is what they should go.
Please. No, don't be a snob.
Since they was – talking about All-State 12, since they got 16, how about the All-State 16? Or I think global would be better until they get it finally to 20 teams.
Yeah, come on.
There'll be an expansion into Mexico or Canada before long for them.
And then coming up at what time? 3:25 today, Scott Russell, one of the great javelin and weight throwers of all time here in the state of Kansas. Six-time All-American. He's going into the Kansas Sports Hall of Fame coming up in October, and did his collegiate work at the University of Kansas. Born in Canada, currently a coach in Eudora, Kansas, which is right there close to Lawrence. So Scott Russell will join us at 3:25. At 2:45 today, Mike, we're going to talk pop culture with you.
Okay.
I don't know what Anthony's into regarding pop culture. Maybe nothing, since he's working 16 hours a day. But maybe he'll have some new questions for you. I saw you went to see the new M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Yep.
You liked it?
I did like it very much, and it's getting very much mixed reviews. But I really like it.
Every movie he makes gets mixed reviews.
It sure does. He's that kind of guy, it seems like, with his movies. I thought the last few of his, with the exception of Cabin in the Woods, were a little weak. The Ode was horrible. But this one was back, to me, to the old M. Night, to some of his old styles of movie making. So.
Well, he made it big with his first one, obviously.
Yep.
Sixth Sense. And then... has been hit and miss since.
The Village is. I love The Village, but most people hated The Village.
It was okay. I haven't seen any M. Night Shyamalan movies since The Village.
Yeah,
that's the last one I saw. But we'll talk
about
more about pop culture.
Okay.
Royals continue their series tonight in Minneapolis against the Twins. They got beat last night, and they are. I told Jeff yesterday. I think the Royals will bypass Cleveland. Well, not yesterday. Cleveland won. The Royals lost. So Cleveland gains a game on Kansas City. Brady Singer not good in that game against the Twins, and they get a shot today to go back against Minnesota, who has a rookie, Gabby. Now I can't think of the guy's name. What's wrong with me? What's wrong with my memory? He pitched here in Wichita.
I'm not going to touch that one.
I learned that you know a lot more about baseball.
I don't like not recalling something, and it irritates the heck out of me. Gebby something. See, this is where Jeff.
This is where Jeff.
This is where Jeff would come in and save me. You two clowns.
Wait a minute. Would he save you, or would he throw you under the bus?
No, he'd save me.
And then throw you on the bus.
Yeah, something like that. So tonight it's Lugo and I can't find it. It's so pathetic.
You're human.
Well, yeah, but
you're human.
This guy was with the Wind Surge.
Somebody will call three.
Yes. I know who you're talking about too, but now I can't think of his.
Well, he was phenomenal. With the Wind Surge. He's been in AAA. He hasn't been quite as good there, but he's making his major league debut tonight, and I should be able to come up with the name.
I should be going to more Wind Surge games. This is what I should be doing without a doubt.
Well, I'm going Friday night. I'm taking my baseball team up. To Riverfront. So we're looking forward to that, and we'll see how that goes.
I may see if I can talk my wife into getting us tickets or us going out to see the – because I know she's listening today. Maybe we can go out and see the Wind Surge.
I'm going to ask you to shut that door, Anthony, because my dog doesn't seem to understand that we're trying to do a radio show.
You know what? I'm glad that I don't feel so bad now. There's times that I've been talking to you from the house. Instead of being in studio, and my dog will start barking.
Zebby Matthews.
There you go. It was this.
Not was Gabby. Not Gabby. Zebby Matthews for the Twins. And I like it when players who played here get to the big leagues. That was always a big. When I was younger and covered minor league baseball, as I did quite a bit. And those players would get to the big leagues. I always felt like, hey, that's really cool.
Yeah. Where were they at then? I mean, like right now they're 2A or roughly a 2A team.
Double A, and then I covered the Wichita Arrows for a few years. That was a Triple A franchise.
Does it seem to you like they go up quicker in the Double A than the Triple A? It seems to me that they go up.
Triple A is the next step to the big leagues, so a lot of those people do get called up from Triple A, but. A lot of the players in AAA have stagnated. So they're kind of just stuck in AAA or they're on their way down. AA players, for the most part, are still seen by their organizations as aspiring, as rising in their organization. So rarely will you have a double A player that is viewed as, well, he's just a double A player and that's all he'll ever be. It happens, but for the most part, the players who are with the Wind Surge right now are players that who are seen by the Twins as having at least a shot to get to the big leagues.
Yeah. When I was in Tennessee, there were so many people in my hometown. The Southern League, which was a rookie league, one of the oldest league, if not the oldest baseball league in the country, they had built a new stadium. They readjusted the whole league, or I think they're single A or double A now. I'm not sure. But and
in
then
Johnson City,
yeah, and then in the college, East Tennessee State University, who has always had a good baseball team, they've renovated their baseball facilities, and it's nice to see that baseball. And as I travel between one place and another, you see that the stadiums are growing. And this is a little thing that I noticed. Architecturally, they're more old school.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like it. I love that.
They're old school, but with a twist of modernization.
Yeah.
So that's what Riverfront Stadium was designed to be in many ways.
And it reminds me of that in many ways too.
But kind of has an old school look with a lot of modern features. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Do you think the kids today will appreciate that as much? I mean, my daughter was going to take me to a Detroit game, and the last time I saw Detroit play, that's back in the Mark Fidrich days, back at the old Tiger Stadium. But I don't know if kids, I guess what they experience now will be what they appreciate when they get older. But you and I, those old school stadiums, there's really something to that.
Well, when I was a kid and I walked into a major league stadium, I was in awe.
Yeah.
I don't know if kids today are in awe of things. I don't know. Maybe they are, but I don't know.
Well, me compared to y'all, I guess I would be that kid. I would be in awe just to go to a major league stadium. I haven't been yet.
Wow. You have not been to a major league stadium?
I've not been to a major league stadium.
Well, I'm gonna demand that you go to Kansas City to watch a Royals game.
Yeah,
before
they're not in Kansas City, right?
You have a favorite team in Major League Baseball?
Y'all gonna laugh at me, but way back when I was kind of really into baseball, and I guess it has something to do with the uniforms, my favorite team was Oakland A's.
Nothing wrong with that.
And I also like the Houston Astros.
Yeah, there's something wrong with that.
and I like the San Diego Padres.
Nothing wrong with that.
But it was something about the uniforms, because everybody seemed like they had the same old dull gray.
You like colorful uniforms.
Didn't have nothing alternative. And, you know, baseball, you know, every team had these ugly, dark shoes, made them look old and slow. And it was the A's, the Astros, and the Padres at the time. They had the white shoes, kind of like before the time, like Billy White Shoes Johnson.
Especially the A's. They were the team that really brought out the white shoes in baseball.
Yes.
At a time when they were really good, too. Yeah. So, caught a lot of attention.
That makes a big difference. If you're really good, you can look at how the sales for that particular item with that team will just go through the roof.
Yeah, I'll never forget the image of Reggie Jackson wearing a pair of white cleats.
In
his early days with Oakland.
The media and its coverage and how it does things makes a huge difference in certain. I don't know if this is true or not. I read it that it was true, that when Caitlin Clark became a member of the Fever, that she sold more jerseys than the Cowboys. I'm not saying that as a joke. I'm saying that
wouldn't shock me.
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me either. But how the media, the attention the athletes get, you talk about with Billy White Shoes Johnson. No one was doing it in the game to that extent that he was in football.
This year in sports will be remembered as, of course, the year of the Olympics, first and foremost, but the year of Caitlin Clark, whose influence has done more to transform women's sports, not just women's basketball, women's sports.
Yeah.
Women's sports have never been at a higher place. I don't care if it's track and field, gymnastics, tennis, golf, whatever it is, people want to see women compete in sports now. And for how many years were we lukewarm to that?
Yeah. I was watching the women's volleyball in the Olympics, and I watched about everything I could on the Olympics. And I thought the women's volleyball was more entertaining than the men. And I'm not talking about beach volleyball. My wife and some other women have serious issues with that. But team volleyball, the speed and the competition, and I think women's been playing it from a small school level all the way up through for a longer time frame than men anyway.
Right.
It was fascinating to watch women this year. And I'm so glad we're talking to a javelin thrower because I've got a couple of questions. Because, man, my grandson and I watched the javelin in the Olympics, and I was noticing things about that particular sport I had never noticed.
I love track and field. Yeah. It's an awesome, awesome sport. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk college football. Our Big 12 previews continue. Matt Mercial covers Central Florida for the Orlando Times Sentinel. We'll get a Central Florida preview next. Bob and Jeff with our good friends, Mike Furches and the big fella, Anthony. Stay with us.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's get to Matt Mercial. A little late. We're sorry, Matt. That's on me. How are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing okay. You're with Bob and Anthony and Mike, and we're excited to get your thoughts on Central Florida, yet another team in the Big 12 that, if things fall in exactly the right place, could be a contender. I think we've said that about every team we've previewed. I've never seen a conference with more balance going into a season. It's crazy.
Yeah, there's a lot of parity in this league this year, and I think that was something that was addressed by Commissioner Brett Yormark at, you know, football media days in Las Vegas last month. He talked a lot about the parity, and you could see it from top to bottom. I mean, you know, obviously you've got the newcomers coming in. You got teams like Utah and Arizona who had strong seasons last year. You've got some of the other teams that have been around for a while in Kansas State and Oklahoma State. And then you've got, you know, like you mentioned, UCF and a couple of the other newcomers who came in last year who maybe have an opportunity to kind of flip the script a little bit and make a, you know, maybe make a little bit of noise when it comes to the title race. So it's a very interesting year for them. And I think it's going to be interesting to watch the title chase in the Big 12.
Yes, Matt, this is Anthony, and I'm just kind of curious as to how long you've been actually following UCF, and because they have evidently experienced some success. We've seen some success coming from that program when it was in the American Athletic Conference. Do you see them getting some of that same success in the Big 12 now? Are they recruiting the same type of players, or are they recruiting better players? What type of success level do you see them having in the Big 12 now?
Yeah, you know, I've been covering them for almost about a decade now, a little more than a decade now since I've been at the Sentinel. And, yeah, I mean, they've had success, obviously, in 2017, 2018. They put together back-to-back undefeated regular seasons. They beat Auburn in the Peach Bowl in 2017. They went to the Fiesta Bowl the following year and lost to LSU and Joe Burrow. So they've had some success, but what they've done – they expected to kind of carry that over into going into the Big 12. And they knew it's going to be a little bit of an uphill climb to begin with, because again, you're making a transition from, you know, a group of five conference to a power five conference. So you're going to have to go out and recruit better players. You're going to have to get better players in the transfer portal. You're going to have to coach at a different level. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, when they brought in Gus Malzahn to be their head coach, the idea was, okay, we're bringing a guy who's coached in the SEC. He's coached in a power league. He knows what it takes to win at that level. And he's done that since he's got here. I mean, he's found ways to recruit differently. They're recruiting a lot of different players. Their recruiting classes are ranked in the top 30, basically the last two seasons. And that's something that's just not, you know, for this program, it hasn't happened. And so it's been a real kind of injection of talent and athleticism. And they feel like that's going to be what they need if they want to compete in the Big 12.
And this is Mike here. a Southern boy, as you can tell. One of the questions I have about you, Seth, especially in regards to recruiting, it's hard enough to recruit just out of Florida. I would consider Florida a power state when it comes to recruiting because there are so many great high school athletes. How does UCF hold its ground in those types of things, in the way that they're recruiting and the players are getting?
Yeah, Florida is definitely a recruiting battleground here. And what UCF has been able to do over the last couple of years especially is, you know, when Gus Malzahn arrived in 2021, his emphasis was on, we're going to recruit the state of Florida like our hair's on fire, is what he told us. And basically they've done that. You know, they've gone up and down the state trying to make sure they could try to get some of the top talent. They really focused on the Central Florida Orlando area. That's something that's kind of been neglected over the last couple coaching staffs. They talked about putting a dome over it essentially and trying to keep the local talent, their hometown heroes. They've been able to do that. They've gone and got, you know, and I think part of what some of their success is they've got a few four-star players that they signed and brought aboard, and they go out and they play and they have some success. So they're able to use them as kind of like a model to what they want to do. So they go around to the other schools and they say, listen, look what this player's done. Look what this kid has done. We think you can do the same sort of thing. You can jump in and play pretty much immediately, and we're going to give you an opportunity to play in a Power 5 conference. And I think that's been the selling appeal to them. Plus, you know, Florida has been down a little bit over the last couple of years. Florida State's just kind of bouncing back after a period of about 4 or 5 years where they weren't really that good. And Miami's still trying to find its way back. So it's been really kind of – the timing has been really perfect for them because all the other power teams in the state – have been down, and you know they've been able to take advantage of that and being able to kind of grab some players that maybe they normally wouldn't have done otherwise in the past.
Talking Central Florida football, Matt Mershell from the Orlando Sentinel as we continue Big 12 previews here on the Bob and Jeff Show. So really good running back returns in RJ Harvey, over 1,400 yards last year. The receiving core looks pretty solid, even though they lost the receiver, Javon Baker, to the NFL. They've got a new quarterback in from the transfer portal. I think every school has a new quarterback in from the transfer portal. This one from Arkansas by the name of KJ Jefferson. Tell us what to make of him, and then how Gus Malzahn has gone about making the defense better, because that was a weakness last year.
Yeah, KJ Jefferson's a big guy. He's a 6'3", 250-pound quarterback, and he's a fifth-year guy who had a stellar career at Arkansas, wanted to have one more opportunity, sat down with Gus Malzahn, and you know he saw what Gus was able to do with a quarterback named Cam Newton a few years back and went on to win the Heisman Trophy when he was at Auburn. So KJ is a big fan of Cam Newton, and so he wanted to basically come somewhere where he felt like he could be coached up and have an opportunity to get to the NFL and play at that elite level. So he feels like Gus is going to be able to provide that for them as well. And I think you got spot on when it comes to the defense. You know, last year UCF's Achilles heel was the defense. They weren't very good against the run. They were last in the Big 12 in stopping the run. So in the offseason, what they did is, you know, Gus Malzahn went out and brought in Ted Roof, a longtime assistant coach who had coached under him many years ago at Auburn, who was at Oklahoma last year. Basically brought him in, a guy who knows how to build run-stopping defenses. So brought him in to kind of rebuild this defense, get them bigger, stronger, faster. They redid the strength and conditioning program, brought in a whole new staff there as well. They've been able to kind of flip the script when it comes to building the athletes' bodies and getting them bigger and stronger. And the focus has been on adding some more depth through the transfer portal and recruiting and trying to make sure that they have enough players in case they do have some injuries that guys go down. They had some guys last year who were hurt and banged up, and they never really had enough players to kind of step in and fill the spots. And I think that's something they learned very quickly about playing in a conference like the Big 12. So they feel like now they're stronger, faster. They feel like they have the ability to stop people. They're a much better tackling team, they believe, and they feel like they're going to have an opportunity to prove that when they get on the field this year.
And speaking of recruiting again, that seems like a key point right there. And you mentioned the schools that were down. How much does that play a role in the fact that they can probably get some of those players that would probably go to a Florida or a Florida State or a Miami? just out of curiosity, are they targeting those type of players, or are they getting the players that are overlooked by those programs, and are they still playing with that same chip on their shoulder?
No, you know, they're going head to head with all these programs. You know, it used to be they would kind of go in and you try to get whatever's left over, or a player maybe that was a three-star guy that maybe one of those schools wasn't interested in. Now they're going head to head with them. They've actually won some recruiting battles with some schools here in the state of Florida. They flipped some Florida kids who were interested in going to play for the Gators. Now they're gonna come to UCF. They've done it on a bigger scale too. They had a couple that a player who was a Georgia commit who just recently flipped and went for their next class. So they're not afraid to kind of go into someone's home and say, we understand that you're thinking about going to Ohio State, or you're thinking about going to Florida State, or you're thinking about going to Miami. We think you should come here and play for us. And they feel like that's a big selling point. And even if they don't get those kids to commit, their thought process is, okay, you may go a year or two at a school and you may not be happy. And then when you jump in the portal, we want to be right there. We want you to remember us, because we're going to be there on the second half of that, the back end, and we're going to get you, and we're going to have you to try to come here and play for us, you know, later on in your career. And that's happened really well for them. That's been the success that they've been able to have, is they've gotten through the transfer portal and grabbed a lot of these kids who maybe gone somewhere else and thought they were going to have success, weren't able to do that, and now turned around and are coming back home, whether it's to be closer to home, whether it's to play, you know, for a power program or something like that. They've done a really good job on that. That's something that's kind of stood out for them, and they're happy to grab as many of those kids as they can possibly do. But Gus Malzahn also knows that you can't just rely on the transfer portal. You've got to develop some players through the high school ranks, and that's why they've gone head to head with a lot of these schools.
This is Mike again. You kind of just answered my question in a way, because I'm thinking of Reddick, the player, the 4-star safety that just transferred over to USC or ended up flipping. How has that process in recruiting, I mean, you touched on that to some extent, how has that changed the game? Because, I mean, it seems like the school or university makes such an effort to get a player, and then at such a late notice they flip and go to another team. I mean, you kind of answered that, but if you expand on that a little bit more, please.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, in the past, you know, I will say, I think the transfer portal, as much as there's a negative connotation to it, I think with things that the transfer portal helps is you don't get nearly as much decommitments or kids flipping as you see. It happens occasionally, as you mentioned, like the UCF had a kid who decided, I think it was last night, he flipped his commitment and went to USC. But, you know, it's not so much so as much anymore, because what they're seeing is, high school players are seeing, is that if a school can't get you, you know, through, you know, recruiting, then they'll just go to the portal and grab someone who's a lot more experienced. They'll go look at the portal and say, okay, I'll get a player who maybe had 2 or 3 years under his belt at college, and I'll bring him aboard. And that way then I don't have to worry about spending 3 years of time to develop you and have you go somewhere else. So there are a lot of high school kids I've spoken with who are nervous about that. You know, they want to make sure that if they're going to go somewhere, they're committed to go somewhere and have some success. Also, you know, name, image, and likeness, you know, NIL and collective, those kind of things, which have been a part of college football the last couple of years, have played a major role in it as well, because you have a lot of collectives that are doing their jobs of trying to make sure they can convince players to come to the school. Our UCF has tried to do that, you know, over the last couple of years. They've built a stronger collective. They're not nowhere near where they want to be in the Big 12. I think they're still in the bottom half, but they feel like if they can get a good chance to sit down with a player, they've got a chance to maybe convince them to come to the school and play for them. So it's definitely changed a lot differently than it used to be about a decade ago when it came to recruiting and how a lot of these schools handle it.
All right, one more question for Matt Mershell from the Orlando Sentinel. Now we study schedules because of the unbalanced nature with all these expansions, especially of Power 5 conferences. And I got to say, UCF has to be doing cartwheels over its schedule because there's no K-State, there's no Kansas, and there's no Oklahoma State. That doesn't mean this is a walk in the park, because Utah and Arizona are opponents, but not until later in the season. This is an ideal schedule for UCF to make a real run, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You agree?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, for sure. I think so. You look at the schedule, you know, last year they had a really difficult schedule. They traveled 17,000 miles. They're on the road a lot. It wore the team down towards the end. You could see that on the field a little bit. This year, it's not the case. And you're right. They don't have to face the big, they don't have to face some of those other ranked schools in the Kansas State, and Oklahoma State. You know, they do have some challenges. They are going to go on the road to TCU. It's a new place for them. I know TCU was down last year. But, you know, again, it's being on the road, opening up Big 12, part of the schedule. They do face Colorado at home. You're not quite sure what you're going to get with Colorado, with Deion Sanders and everything he brings there. And you got a road game at, you know, Iowa State and at West Virginia down the road. Those are going to be challenges for them, you know. And you mentioned Arizona and Utah. So the back half of the schedule is a little bit difficult. If they could start out strong, if they can get, you know, go 3-0, 4-0, 5-0, they've got an opportunity to make some noise. You know, they just can't get tripped up early on. But the schedule is favorable for them, and they got opportunities to try to really, you know, make some moves here. They just can't. They have to avoid what kind of happened last year, where they weren't able to finish games and they found themselves, you know, tied or leading late in games, and then somehow gave up in the last couple of minutes. So if they can do that, I think they got a good strong opportunity.
Matt, good stuff. Thank you so much for being on with us discussing Central Florida football. We appreciate it. Best of luck covering the team this year. Thanks again.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Take care.
All right. Matt Mershell from the Orlando Sentinel. How about if we just start over?
Okay, we'll start.
I heard Rome do that a couple weeks ago. He just started the show over. And it was a better show.
With Rome, that can be a normal thing. But with you, I mean, it's so spot on most of the time.
Well, and this isn't on you guys. This is completely me.
No.
Max has got me flustered. Max knows I love him. I don't know what's going on.
Max.
And you're just sitting there smiling, Anthony.
It's just one of them days. Everybody has those moments. I mean, I had those moments too. Walk out the house, remember that I forgot something, and I don't know, it must be something about the door, because as soon as you walk back through the door, whatever it was you remembered, you forgot.
Well, usually for me when I do that, Anthony, I forgot something, and I walk out the door and say, what did I forget? And I go try to back in the house to find it, and my keys are in the door.
Or you go look for your glasses and they're on your face.
That happened to me last week.
Really?
So, Bob, you're not alone. Everybody have them days.
You're trying to find your phone and it's in your hand. I know that people's going through this kind of stuff.
I'm having one of those afternoons. I was pretty good this morning, pretty sharp, kind of on top of my game. And you guys came over, and it's all falling apart on me.
It's like deja vu.
Wait a minute. I'm not going to let that one slide right there. He said everything was going well, and then we came over. Did you catch that?
Yeah, I heard it. But
that is the one thing that happened that sent me into a tailspin.
I'm going to have to start acting like Jeff now.
It's a new three-man crew that's never happened before, you know.
One thing you'll notice on this show, I never take responsibility for my own mishaps.
We could tell he's a LeBron James
fan. You kind of came close to that once.
Did I?
Yeah. After, you know, it's been almost eight years since I've been doing this with you. Isn't that unbelievable?
That is unbelievable.
Almost 8 years. It's unreal.
We had a guy doing it, and he couldn't do it anymore. And I put out a plea on Facebook saying, we need somebody to come on this show and talk pop culture, because I've never wanted this to be a strictly sports show. That doesn't interest me. I've immersed myself in sports for my entire life. I have other interests. I like talking movies and music and whatever. And so we reached out, and somebody suggested Mike, and all these years later, here he is.
Yeah. I think my buddy Eric Scriven, give a shout out.
Could have been Eric Scriven.
And Clint Deard, who was at the time working with the T. Boone Pickens down in Texas, but from Topeka. I think those were two that contacted me. And someone else did. I can't remember her, but I remember those two because Eric and I had close associations. Well, with soccer, and then Clint and I through wrestling. So,
and then Eric, Anthony with his podcast.
Yeah. And the Preacher Man.
Yeah.
Hey, we had a lot more in common than you realize, bro.
Maybe you'll need to get Mike on your podcast someday.
Yeah, I'm going to get him on there. I think I've reached out to him a few times, so, you know, it's just
he's hard to get. You got to go through his people.
Yeah, got the gatekeepers. We used to call it MCI back in the day when I worked there.
Has Jeff been on your podcast?
He's been on there.
Wait, hold on here. I'm behind. You mean Jeff's top billing over me?
Jeff has been. Hey, Jeff didn't hesitate.
I'm on his time. You let me know. You give me a time and a date.
Okay.
And we're good to go.
Oh, I also heard some good news. I might be late. They might have already announced this, but how about this partnership that KFH is and Vipe Kansas has formed and going to be top tier for all your high schools?
Well, we've had Joanna on for 8 years. It's not.
No,
Joanna, I mean, it's great that we have the partnership officially with Vibe, but we've had her on for on this show.
She's a great person.
Beginning.
Back in Tennessee.
She's okay. Let's not go overboard.
The thing that when you have Joanna as a guest back in Tennessee, I love, and they still do it. It's a big deal. Every Friday night, you've got the couple local stations that's got people out covering all the games, giving the reports, what's happening here, and you know what's going on between Andover and whoever, and then Derby and Manhattan. And they have live broadcasts where you have your main core, just like on television, where you've got the people that's covering all the college games, but they do that with the high school games. High school football, for it to be such an event, I'm sorry, it needs more coverage in the paper.
Well, it used to get a ton of coverage, and then newspapers went the way they've gone. And that affected the coverage. Now, I don't know what TV does, but I'm just going to say this, and no offense to anyone on TV, but newspapers can cover high school sports in a far superior fashion.
Yeah.
Even with the visuals that TV can provide, and those are good. The rundown, the stats, the observation, the description of covering a high school game. I so think newspapers have missed the boat on this. And they should be somewhat ashamed because that's Americana. And we've allowed a real slice of Americana to disappear. And what do we do as a society? We can't do anything about it.
And then we question why things have changed.
Yeah. Well, it's part of it.
Well, it's like people like they like an 8-second segment, which is why you see all the quick edits on television and movies now to keep your attention. I prefer the narrative, the written word, the detail, the character development.
Well, we used to send out a team of reporters to high school games every Friday night for football, every Tuesday and Friday for basketball. We covered 6-7 games a night, and they were in the paper the next morning, and you got to see the box score, and you got to see the write-up, and you got to see names of high school athletes. We don't see names of high school athletes anymore.
Right.
At least not consistently. And it's a shame. It's a real shame that that we're allowing this to happen.
I'm going to tell you where you're going to get most of the names of your high school athletes. If you want to really reach out to them, get your X account. And y'all know how they say X, formerly known as. I'm not going to say all that because they're going to be saying it 20 years from now. X, formerly known as.
I call it Twitter. We call it Twitter.
Okay. Well, Twitter. And that's how I'm able to reach out and attract some of these young student athletes. And they just love it. So.
Well, I'll say this. I'm not going to follow high school kids on Twitter.
I got coaches, too.
It's fine that you do,
right.
But I'd rather be able to read about their accomplishments.
And then to have a place that you can go to where a single solitary place, because the box scores. You know,
I haven't seen a high school box score. And
as an athlete, I'm telling you, you may not have been great, but I enjoyed going and looking, you know, Furches 11 points, you know, 2 rebounds or whatever it would have in there. That's good for the kids. Now they get their notoriety through Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or whatever.
Or TikTok.
Yeah, or whatever. And I'm going to be old-fashioned and say that there were some things, there were actually quite a few things about those old days related to sports and coverage that were better.
But young people may not view it that way. We didn't. When technology advanced, we didn't look at the old days and say that was better. I don't know if a high school kid would say, man, I'd sure like a box score to appear. Or they just relish the advent and the proliferation of social media, and that's their coverage, and they're fine with it. As long as they can appeal to their fellow athletes, You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but the numbers of those I still think is down because then it's a selective audience.
It is, but maybe that I can't speak as a young person because I'm not one. But maybe a selective audience is what this generation prefers.
Yeah.
All right, I got to take a break. We will get to pop culture with Mike Furches, the big fella Anthony in as well. It's a Tuesday edition, the Bob and Jeff Show. We've got an interview with Scott Russell, former Olympian in the javelin throw from KU and a native of Canada. Too bad Duda's not here today. This is a rare time when a Canadian found success. We'll talk to Scott Russell coming up at 3:25. Stay with us.
Are you looking for a podcast about pro football that doesn't put you to sleep with an avalanche of analytics or insult your fandom with brainless hot takes? Well, hi. I'm Dan Hanzus.
And I'm Mark Sessler.
Oh, hi, Mark. And we're the hosts of Heed the Call, the NFL podcast you've been waiting your whole life for.
Heed the Call covers every game, every storyline, everything that matters, and we do it all with a touch of mirth.
Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast wherever you get your podcasts.